Bags v. ReadyBag USA, 2013, 1064. Mr. Zito.
Good morning, Your Honor. This case on appeal presents two issues. One issue is the improper jury instruction, and the other is the improper imposition of time restrictions, the unfairness of the trial. It goes without saying or reiteration that if you instruct the jury to compare the two products, as opposed to compare the accused product to the claim, that's an improper instruction. That's an error under the plain error statute.
But that's not what the jury instruction here says, right?
What the judge instructed the jury after,
right,
in response to their question, okay, where they may not have been looking at the two products. He instructed them that the two products do not have to be identical. That is telling the jury that it's okay, that you're allowed to, and probably, the jury was having difficulty looking at the claim.
Well, the statement is literally true and correct, right, that not every element of the two products must be identical, right?
Right, but this statement was not made to patent attorneys. It was not made in the course of a lecture. It was made in response to a jury question. The jury said, we're looking at words, and we're looking at a physical product, and we're having a difficulty here because one of the things seems to be different. The judge gave him two sentences in response, strong words coming from a federal judge to a lay jury, that said, what you would infer as a jury is, if you're having difficulty looking at those words in that product, look at the two products, compare them. They don't have to be identical, but you can look over there. And that's an improper instruction. We don't have to show on appeal that the jury actually looked at the two products, because we don't know what the jury did. We don't have to show that that was the influence that made the decision. We need to show that you cannot instruct the jury to not every element of the two products must be identical. As a juror, and even as an attorney, that suggests to me that some of the elements of the two products should be identical, not all of them. Well, right there, in order to find out whether they're identical or not identical, I have to compare the two products. And the jury had the plaintiff's product and the defendant's product in the jury room with plastic bags. The difference in this case is our plastic bag has a pouch. We believe the defendant's plastic bag has a pouch. They refer to it as a sleeve. It has a slightly different shape and performs the exact same function. So that was the issue. When the judge told them, they only asked one question. They only got one response. It was only two sentences. It's not like it was buried in the original instructions. Had some phrase like this been buried in the original hour and a half reading of instructions, perhaps you could argue it was not influential.
And is it your view that you had no idea that the sentence was going to be in
there? As the judge said, all we knew was that the judge's law clerk had suggested changing the second sentence. That's all the judge said. As soon as that occurred, I said, Your Honor, do you think they're comparing the products? He said, I don't know. So I expressed concern that you can't compare products. The judge, at the end of that session, which is page A1381 of the appendix, the judge asked, was there any other suggestions? He was still taking suggestions. Mr. Triantafillis, my opposing counsel, said, you should just answer yes, one word. The judge said, I wish they had never raised it, but since they have, I think I need to be a little more responsive than just saying yes. Thank you very much. He said, I'm going to go out, figure out what the answer is, come back and tell you, then I'll give it to the jury. So we would have time to look at what his answer is going to be and object, formally object. He didn't do that. He simply wrote down the answer, adopted the law clerk's suggestion, not any of the attorney's suggestion, the law clerk's suggestion, and gave that to the jury. Next thing we know, 20 minutes later, the jury comes back with a decision. At that point, we were handed the answer to the
And your view is that before seeing this one sentence, the jury understood that they couldn't compare the two products. They had to compare claims to the product. And that this sentence definitively convinced them that, no, that's not the way you do it. You do it by comparing the products. Is that your interpretation of your view of the effect the sentence had?
Yes. Put yourself in a jury room where you've deliberated for several hours, and you're looking at words of a claim, as we all know, is written in archaic language, and then you've got a claim construction written by the judge, which is semi-archaic language, and you're having difficulty. But you have these two plastic bags sitting right there. You're not sure. Maybe you think you can, maybe you think you can't. Doesn't matter. The judge comes back and says, you can look at the plastic bags, but you don't have to find that they're identical.
Well, that's not all he said. The first sentence said quite clearly that you, I don't know what it is, that you apply the claims to the product, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. So and that's, yeah.
Right. He says, while you're applying the claim language to the product, you can look at the two products. He says, however, right after saying, compare the claim language to the product, he says, however, not every element of the two products must be identical. So it's telling you, as a juror, here's a shortcut. Pick up those two plastic bags. Look at them. Stop looking at that claim. Look at those bags. They don't have to be identical.
Do you want to get to your second point?
Sure. I think the first point is very important. I think that that has to be, you can't let this be an instruction to a jury from a district judge that it's proper in a patent case, and this case needs to be reversed because of that. The other issue is the fairness of the trial. Yes, if an attorney says, I'm going to take 3 hours to do something, or 10 minutes, or 15 minutes, you can start a timer and cut him off at that point. That's perfectly fine. The attorney says, it's going to take me 2 hours or a day and a half, and it takes him 6 days, the judge can give him that leeway. Both of those are perfectly fine. But what happened in this case is that opposing counsel said, I'll take a day and a half. And I said, great, I'll take a day and a half. I'll take a three-day trial. Day and a half into it, the judge kept telling him to hurry up, never cut him off, never said stop, never said, you know, that's it, that's enough, 10 minutes, nothing. All the way through the end of the day on Thursday, which was a half day. 2 hours into
it. So your view is that we on review here should conclude that the district court abused his discretion by not cutting them off at a certain point in the trial?
No.
Where is the abuse of discretion?
By changing that standard as soon as our case began and cutting people off at specific times. Whether or not I said 1 day, 2 hours,
well,
6 hours.
He didn't cut you off if it's correct that you said you only need 2 or 3 hours, right? That's not, then why would, there was no opportunity to cut you off or not cut you off, right?
Well, if he had, but he applied the 2 hours we're going to finish by 3 o'clock on Friday standard, by cutting me off and limiting things to 10 minutes and 15 minutes as we put forth in our brief. Opposing counsel had said it's going to take a day and a half. If he had cut opposing counsel off in the middle of the day on Tuesday, I'd say that's fine, equal treatment. My point is, yes, he can cut me off. If I say 2 hours, he can cut me off at 2 hours, but he has to have done the same thing in the other half of the trial. You can't treat both sides unequally. Either treatment is fine.
Do you have any case, I mean, what's the closest case you have? Do you have any of our cases? Because this seems like quite a different and unique issue that's come before an appellate tribunal here. I don't recall ever sort of getting this kind of appeal. Do you have any case law?
We don't have any case law. And that's why it drops into the abuse of discretion standard, not de novo review or clear error standard. We've cited the cases that talk about unfair trials, but we found no case that had this sort of a situation. That's correct. And we think that kind of treatment would signal to a jury that there's a preferential position of the court for one side versus the other. That this is very important. We let him talk for days and days and days and days. This other guy, he's not very important. I'm going to cut him off right at an hour, right at 15 minutes, whatever. And it will show a bias towards the jury.
We'll save the remainder of your time, Mr. Zito. Hear from Ms. Jones.
Good morning. May it please the Court. I'd like to start by addressing the proper standard of review for the supplemental jury instruction issue. Because Ready Bags did not object to the language of the supplemental jury instruction, this court's review of the district court's denial of a new trial based on the alleged error should be limited to plain error.
But can you be a little clear? I'm a little confused on the record here. I mean, there are people telling different variations of a story. Why is it clear? What in the record indicates to you that it's clear that they had an opportunity to object and did not?
Well, I think we've pointed in our briefs to the discussion that the district court had in the supplemental in the hearing of the supplemental jury instruction issue, and the proposed language was discussed by counsel, and counsel for Ready Bag expressed a concern, but the only concern he expressed was that the jury may be comparing products. He didn't express any concern that the language that the district court's law clerk proposed
so, was but he knew at some point that the district court was going to embrace and put in the language of the law clerk into the jury instruction, and he had time after that to object?
Well, I think the purpose of holding this hearing to discuss the supplemental jury instruction was for everyone to vet their concerns with the suggestions. And so when this language came up, it was the obligation of counsel to object if he had any problems with the language that was proposed. Now, counsel just suggested that when the court recessed at the end of that hearing, he suggested that he was going to come back and tell them what he adopted and give them an opportunity to object, but the record does not reflect that. He just said thank you and concluded the proceedings there. And I think to require the district court judge to come back and say, this is what I've objected to.
So what your view is that what the law clerk was proposing, which is the second sentence that they're objecting to, was on the table.
Right, and if there was a problem with it, then he should have let the district court judge know at that time. To require the district court judge to come back yet again, I think, would be to hold him to an overly rigid process that's not workable at the district court. So I wanted to point out that Ready Bags argues in its reply brief that this issue of the standard of review is governed by Federal Circuit law. But this court held in Lazar Kaplan v. Photoscribe Technologies, which can be found at 628 F3rd 359, that you'll look to regional circuit law to determine whether a party has properly preserved its objection to a jury instruction. In our brief, we pointed to the Fifth Circuit's holding in Wirtz v. International Harvester, in which the Fifth Circuit held that the party that's saying that it made the objection bears the burden of showing that it made the specific objection. And here, ReadyBag has not shown that it made the specific objection. And it doesn't say that it did not object. It just says it wasn't given the opportunity to object. But I think the fact that the district court held this proceeding demonstrates otherwise. So because ReadyBag was given a position opportunity to object, it did not do so, this court's review of this issue should be limited to plain error. But putting aside the applicable standard of review, the supplemental jury instruction itself was not legally erroneous and it was not prejudicial. No one in the case, not the judge, the attorneys, the witnesses, experts, suggested that the proper test for infringement was comparing products. In fact, the district court explained in its opinion that it was a concern that the jury might have been comparing products but led it to adopt the second sentence that's now disputed, that not every element of the two products needs to be identical. And the instruction correctly directed the jury to the patented claim to determine infringement, stating that each and every element of the patented claim must be found in Better Bags product to constitute infringement. So when you consider the instruction as a whole, it cannot be said to have directed the jury to compare products to determine infringement. But even if the instruction did not completely foreclose the jury from doing so, from comparing products, any alleged error would be harmless, not prejudicial. Because when you look at both sentences, the jury would have understood that there is no point in comparing the products, because whether the products are identical or they're not identical, it has no bearing on infringement. They were properly instructed that to determine infringement, they need to look at the patented claim and determine whether each and every element is in Better Bags product.
Can I just, what are we to make of the judge's comments that this trial was not a good one and he strongly tempted to have another? Are we supposed to take those kinds of comments into consideration when we're reviewing them under abuse of discretion?
Well, I think that throughout the trial, the district court realized that it was extending longer than the parties had anticipated. And he didn't find that either side was to blame for that. But he did offer at various points, he offered money back to counsel more time or to extend the trial into the next week. But Ready Bag decided not to take that offer and said that it only needed 3 hours. In fact, the evening when Better Bag closed its case, Thursday afternoon, the court again addressed this issue and Ready Bags counsel said it only needed 3 hours to present its case. And the record shows that Ready Bags was in fact given 3 hours to present its case on Friday, if you go through and look at the time. And one of the reasons that Ready Bags likely only needed 3 hours to present its case is that they had already put on several of their witnesses during Better Bags' case in chief. And if you want an example, you can look at Appendix 1043. When they were opening their case, they said they put on their first witness, Jennifer Boyer, during Better Bags' case. So they did, in fact, have more time to present their case than it suggests. And the record further demonstrates that after Ready Bags' counsel, that after trial in a post-verdict hearing, Ready Bags' counsel admitted that they were able to put on all of their evidence and they would not have done anything differently.
Yeah, but I think his argument may be a little different, right? I mean, his view is that it prejudiced the view of the jury with respect to the parties, given the differential treatment that the judge gave. It kind of set the stage for thinking, well, this guy's got a much more important case. We should have listened to him for much longer time. So that's a little different, right?
I understand that point. I think that the difference is that when Better Bags was presenting its case and it felt that it needed more time, it told the court that it needed more time, and it was granted that time. Ready Bags was offered the same opportunity to take more time, but it continually said, no, we want 3 hours, we don't need the extra time, we don't want to extend the trial into the next week. So having told the jury, the judge having told the jury that the trial was going to end on Friday, when Friday came around, he tried to make sure that that actually happened, given that that's what counsel had asked for. So I think that if Ready Bag had came in on Friday and said, you know what, I need extra time, I would like to extend the trial into the next week, then there would have been equal treatment, but that simply did not happen.
What was the deal with the jurors? They were going to lose two jurors if they carried it over the final week. Were those the alternates, or did they have enough alternates? They wouldn't have had to redo this, right?
Right, but that's not my understanding, that they would have had to redo the trial if they extended it into the next week, and I think that's why the district court judged that option. And unless there are additional questions, we'll rest on our brief.
Thank you, Ms. Jones. Mr. Zito has 6 minutes of rebuttal time.
On the question of juror, we would have been down to the minimum number of jurors. We lost three over the weekend. We would have been down to the minimum number of jurors the next week, assuming that all the other six jurors did actually show up. So there was a question, but it was not a, we wouldn't have had to start again.
Steve, your contention on this time issue is that by limiting your time, the judge conveyed to the jury, for want of a better word, displeasure with your case. Is that the idea?
Yes, sir.
Right. Now, looking back over the entire trial, is there anything in the record of the judge appearing to come down harder on one side than the other, or hectoring one side as opposed to the other? Ms. Jones has said that the trial went on longer than planned and that the judge didn't blame either of the parties for that. But looking back from your perspective over the record, do we have a record here that shows the judge, leaving aside this issue about the end of the trial and the time, of giving one side, for want of a better word, a harder time than the other, so as to convey to the jury prejudice against that side?
The judge actually did say that most of the blame for the extra time was on the other side of the case. And he did say that. His statement about mea culpa and the de cor says, and I believe Mr. Zito was very rushed in his presentation, which is not an equal statement. During the case, the judge, yes, actually did show disfavor, not for me, but for some of the arguments Mr. Triantafillis was making regarding some of the contract claims, which he then dismissed as having no substantial evidence anyway. So that if there was any direct prejudicial statements, they were not actually directed at me, they were actually directed at the other side.
Well, that would suggest then that wouldn't that, you're being very candid, and that's appropriate, but it just seems to me it's difficult, given the context that you've described of the whole trial, for us to say that this jury could reasonably conclude that there was prejudice directed against one side, when, as you pointed out, the judge came down harder on the other side during the rest of the trial.
Yeah. Well, not during the rest of the trial, at one point.
Well, yeah.
Yes.
But to the extent there was criticism directed at anybody, you've pointed out it was directed at the better bag side of the case.
Correct. Moving from the issue of prejudicial back to the issue of the jury instruction. The court said on A1379, towards the end of the discussion about the jury instruction, okay, anybody else want to say anything? I'll make my decision, but does anybody else want to say anything? He had not made a decision and not presented us with an answer. There was no opportunity to object. And I did raise the objection, don't compare the products. Okay. It was a free-flowing discussion of what sorts of things do you want to tell the jury. From the word yes to my suggestion, tell them that all if one of the elements is missing, you find non-infringement. If it's just different, you find infringement. And if you don't find infringement, you look at the doctrine of equivalence. I had much longer suggestions, you see on the record. We were bandying things about, and he said, I'll make my decision. We then had a short discussion where yes came up, and we discussed the word identical. There was clearly no suggestion at any point by the court that they were adopting the law clerk's second sentence. So there was no opportunity to object, beyond the fact that I did actually raise an objection to comparing products. And so to say that we didn't object and therefore this jury instruction is not correct. However, even if the court were to find that we didn't formally object, which is incorrect, even under the clear error standard, which is what opposing counsel says it drops to, it's clearly an error to tell them in the context of comparing the claims to the accused product, you should compare the products and don't find all the elements identical. Yes, you can break it apart and say, oh, look, they had the right instruction in the first sentence, and so they would ignore the second sentence. No, the second sentence starts with however, so it modifies the first sentence. It invalidates the correct first sentence by saying, however, not all the elements of the two products must be identical. You're telling them this is the context in which you do the claim analysis. And it's not. It's not proper. It's not an instruction that needs to be part of the patent law. It's not an instruction that needs to stand as being endorsed by this court as a proper instruction. And even the judge didn't understand that when he said, and I've quoted that in my brief, the judge said, it's harmless error. They're allowed to do that as long as they don't concentrate on it. Okay? And even the judge did not understand after we had the hearing 6 months after the trial, we had a hearing on the motions. And the judge said, and I quoted that in my responsive brief and other brief, that's okay, it's harmless error. They're allowed to do that as long as they don't know, as long as they don't think they have to do it, as long as they know it's permissible to, and I think that's the word he used, as long as it's permissible to compare the products, we didn't tell them they had to, then that jury instruction's okay. You just can't let that law stand. It's not proper, and it's not how patent jury instructions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Z.